The Venezuelan president meets with Iran's leader and hails Tehran's support for Caracas in its fight against the United States. China hits out of the U.S. for its stance over Taiwan, calling on Washington to stop smearing Beijing and harming its interests. Americans rallied to push lawmakers to take action on gun violence in the wake of several bloody mass shootings across the country. This is World News, live broadcast from Tehran. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that experience has shown that resistance is the only way toward victory against America's pressure campaigns. In a meeting with Venezuelan President Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said that Iran and Venezuela have managed to defeat the U.S. hybrid warfare. The leader said Washington imposed the most severe sanctions on Tehran under the so-called maximum pressure campaign, but Iran managed to defuse the U.S. plot on the back of resistance. Ayatollah Khamenei welcomed the signing of a 20-year cooperation agreement by the two countries, urging efforts to implement it. The leader said that Iran has proved it doesn't shy away from helping its friends when they're in danger. The Venezuelan president thanked Iran for its support for Caracas and its hard fight against the U.S. Nicolas Maduro said that Iran helped Caracas get out of a very difficult situation at a time when no other country backed the Latin American country. He said that Venezuela managed to resist a multidimensional U.S. war, and it's now better off compared to several years ago. Now, Iran and Venezuela have signed a 20-year cooperation document, and that focuses on petrochemical, oil, economic, tourism, cultural, and political cooperation, and it was signed during a two-day official visit to Tehran by the Venezuelan president. Salman Kujuri has more.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi and his visiting Venezuelan counterpart Nicolas Maduro have signed a 20-year document on comprehensive strategic cooperation, which mainly covers a wide range of areas including petrochemical, oil, economic, tourism, cultural and political fields. In a press briefing after the signing ceremony, President Raisi and his Venezuelan counterpart Maduro said the two countries should work together closely in areas such as trade, economy, agriculture, as well as science and technology. They also hailed establishment of direct Tehran-Caracas flights as an opportunity to enhance relations and bring the two nations closer.
Venezuela has shown that it has put up exemplary resistance against the enemy's threats, sanctions, and imperialism. The Iranian nation, too, has been under numerous sanctions and threats for more than 40 years now. But the Iranian people have turned these sanctions into an opportunity to further make progress.
We will witness how the new world will take shape and how we will stand up to problems and secure progress. Iranian and Venezuelan youth should know that the future world will enjoy equality and justice, and that we will stand up to imperialism.
Earlier on Friday, in an interview with Iran's Spanish TV channel Hispan TV, Maduro said Venezuela and Iran are on the front line of shaping a world free of imperialism and dominant powers. Maduro also hailed Iran's courageous move to send fuel tankers to his energy-hungry nation, saying Tehran's delivery of oil to Caracas was a great help to the Venezuelan people.
Now the relations between the two countries are in the best condition, and with the signing of the comprehensive roadmap of cooperation between the two countries, the path of deepening bilateral cooperation will be broadened more than before. We hope that with the increase of contacts and exchanges of visits in the future, the ground for implementing the 20-year document will be provided.
Heading a high-ranking political-economic delegation, Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro arrived in Tehran on a two-day state visit at the invitation of Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi. This is his second visit to Tehran. The first one took place about 6 years ago. Both Iran and Venezuela have managed to withstand the economic pressures from the United States and have closely cooperated to offset the impact of the illegal sanctions, especially in their energy sectors. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi says that the recent assassination of an IRGC colonel was a cowardly act and a proof of the enemy's despair in the face of Iran's power. He condoled with the family of Hassan Sayed Khodai during a visit to their home. The colonel was shot dead by two gunmen on a motorbike outside his house in an eastern Tehran neighborhood last month. He was a former Iranian military advisor in Syria. At a time, U.S. media reports hinted at Israel's involvement in his assassination. The commander of IRGC also pointed the finger at Zionist elements and promised to avenge his blood. Time for the news review section. The exchange of heated rhetoric continues between China and the United States, Beijing now calling for Washington to stop smearing China and harming its interests. The tough words come in reaction to U.S. Defense Secretary accusing China of destabilizing military activity near Taiwan. Defense Minister Wei Fenghe says that China will fight to the very end to ensure that Taiwan remains part of the country. According to Wei, anyone who attempts to split the Chinese territory will, in his words, come to no good end. He also said that Beijing wants peace but is opposed to providing weapons to Taiwan. Wei noted that it's up to the U.S. to improve bilateral relations. Tensions are soaring between the two sides. The U.S. saying that China's flights near Taiwan are provocative, but Beijing accuses Washington of pushing Taipei toward independence. Now, to get some insight on this, I will be joined by two guests. We have Kendo Shu, who is a senior fellow at the Pangol Institution in Beijing. Also, Einar Tengen, political analyst, is joining us out of Beijing. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Kendo Shu, given all the differences existing, as you know, between the U.S. and China, and at this one, Taiwan is now coming under spotlight. So what's your assessment, and where is this process leading to?
Well, you know, Taiwan, for those who are not familiar with the situation, Taiwan is part of China. Anyone who doubts this position should check with their government documents and check their relationship with China. You know, there's a one China principle. Taiwan is part of China, period. That's it. And if that's true with the U.S., that's true with Iran, that's true with the European countries, that's true with Russia, basically with everybody in the world. So why China, why Taiwan becomes a question? You know, for China, that's unfinished business of the civil war in the 1940s between the communists and the KMT. And then there's a legacy, that's a Taiwan issue. So for China to finish its national reunification, that's with Taiwan and the mainland. But for the U.S., the U.S. sees Taiwan as a critical interest for its national, let's say national dominance in this region and around the world. Because the rise of China somehow challenges this regional hegemony of the United States. So the U.S. will do everything, just like you know what happened to Xinjiang, Hong Kong, or other issues. The U.S. will use Taiwan as a card against China. So now what we are seeing is that the U.S. strategy being implemented, basically using Taiwan against China. So that's why China will continue to do whatever it needs to do, probably, to ensure, of course, for the Chinese military, their fiscal responsibility to protect national territorial integrity, that's including Taiwan. And that's unfortunately goes against the U.S. interests of, you know, dominating this region.
Okay. Einar, how do you look at this? Because many observers are saying that also Kendo Shu also kind of referred to that. This is what the U.S. is doing to try to kind of check Chinese growing power and influence. Now, what about the Taiwanese? What will they expect to get out of independence from China?
Well, first off, I mean, as Kendo has said, their independence for Taiwan is not an issue. Taiwan is part of one China. It was accepted by the U.S. in 1973 when they summarily dismissed Taiwan from the U.N. It's not a country that belongs to the international body of countries. It is simply a legacy of an unfinished past brought on by colonialism, the support by the U.S. for the U.S. by for you know, the Kuomintang government was extended. It's just unfinished business. In terms of what is saying, I agree with Jinduo, this is simply a card that's being used. Interestingly, what the way they're doing it is the U.S. is accusing China of, you know, destroying the status quo or threatening it, when in fact it's the U.S. who's doing that. I mean, the numbers, increased frequency of high-level visits of U.S. Not predominantly personnel, but government officials to the country, military aid and billions of dollars, which have crossed the line between what it would call defensive to being offensive. You know, sailing ships up and down the Taiwan Strait under some theory that China would cut off 40% of its economy by somehow threatening a passage through the South China Seas. And it just, you know, the list goes on and on. But once again, the U.S. strategy is to accuse others of what they are, in fact, doing themselves.
Okay, thank you so much, Kendo Shu and Einar Tengen, both of them in Beijing. Welcome back. Let's move on. Russian and Ukrainian forces are locked in an intense battle in Severodonetsk, one of Ukraine's last holdouts in the eastern Donbass region. Kiev says it remains in control of a chemical plant there, where hundreds of civilians have taken shelter. According to Ukrainian officials, 800 people are hiding underneath the Azov plant. A pro-Russia representative of the Lugansk region, however, says about 400 Ukrainian troops are also holed up there. The official added that those fighters are trying to negotiate their way out of the city, adding that such demands are not acceptable. Elsewhere, Kiev has reported the death of 24 more children in the southeastern city of Mariupol that was captured by Russia in mid-May. The mayor has reported cases of cholera and other infectious diseases there, calling for more humanitarian aid. Meanwhile, Moscow is saying its air defense forces have shot down three Ukrainian warplanes in southern and northeastern Ukraine. And that's while Kiev is asking the West for more advanced weapons. John Emeter joined us earlier to fill us in with the latest details on the situation in Ukraine's Donbass region.
Looks like Russian forces are in control of most of the city now. As President Zelensky says that this city represents the fight for Donbass. He's exaggerating when he says that there will be other battles before Russia is able to take the whole of Donbass. But Russia, this is an important victory that Russia is securing at the moment. As you rightly say, there is another Azov-style steel plant, if you like, another steel plant in which there are some fighters being hauled up in. There's reports there are some civilians there in which there's negotiations. Now, when in Mariupol, when Ukrainian soldiers stayed inside Azov-style steel plant, it was able to stop the Russian forces from sending troops elsewhere, if you like, holding up the Russian advance. Will. So it's unclear whether maybe that's what Ukraine is trying to do again, hold up the Russian advance by keeping soldiers in a steelworks in the city of Severodonetsk. It was an interesting piece by the Guardian newspaper today, quite a staggering piece actually. It said that between 600 and 1,000 Ukrainian soldiers were being killed or wounded every day, which if that is true, it's a staggering number. It works out about 20,000 a month. Obviously, these figures would be unsustainable for Ukraine. The article goes on to say that Ukraine is running out of ammunition. Many Ukrainians have admitted that they're running out of ammunition. So the article was saying very much this could be a turning point.
Let's now turn to the U.S., where a thousand people have held nationwide protests to demand tighter gun control laws amid a spate of mass shooting there.
Everyday shootings
are everyday problems.
The rallies were held in Austin, New York, Washington, D.C., and other cities. They were organized by March for Our Lives, created by survivors of the high school mass shooting in Parkland, Florida, in 2018. The activists are calling for restrictions on assault rifles or an outright ban on them. Many deadly mass shootings, including the most recent one in Uvalde, Texas, that killed 19 elementary school students, have been carried out using an assault rifle. According to Gun Violence Archive, firearms have killed some 19,030 people in the U.S. so far this year. The backlash continues to build against a Saudi-funded golf tournament currently underway in London. The families of 9/11 victims are blasting what they call the betrayal of U.S. golfers competing in the event. A coalition of families and survivors of 2001 terrorist attacks have been urging the golfers to withdraw from the Golf Invitational Series. They've sent a letter to golfers saying that a message must be sent to the kingdom that respect cannot be bought, it must be earned. They say that Saudi Arabia shoulders responsibility for providing financial and logistical support to the terrorists. 15 out of the 19 hijackers that orchestrated the attacks were from Saudi Arabia. Yet the kingdom denies complicity in the attacks, which killed nearly 3,000 people. Riyadh is accused of investing in sports and using high-profile events to sport-wash its reputation, including its human rights abuses. Now, 20 years ago, two 14-year-old South Korean girls were walking to their friend's birthday party when they were run over and killed by a U.S. military vehicle. Saturday, thousands rallied to mark their tragic deaths and called for a change in the U.S.-South Korea relations. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
Thousands of South Koreans gathered in downtown Seoul to remember the tragic deaths of Shin Mi-sun and Shin Hyo-soon, ran over by a U.S. military vehicle on their way to their friend's birthday party on June 13, 2002. The children's family's lawyer hopes for change in U.S. relations and influence on Korea. Two U.S. soldiers were charged with negligent homicide, but acquitted in a U.S. military court amid anti-American candlelight protests. The deaths of Mi-sun and Hyo-soon under the tracks of a U.S. military vehicle 20 years ago are but one episode of a problematic alliance relationship, from the Status of Forces Agreement to the cost of hosting 28,500 troops in South Korea. Alliance ties are a constant source of controversy and debate. Some argue South Koreans view the presence of U.S. forces as an obstacle, preventing the country from exercising sovereignty.
It's not fit for the global era and very risky for South Korea to cling to a falling sun with the status of American hegemony declining so much. I hope we can establish more neutral diplomacy reflecting our national interests.
New President Yoon Suk-yeol seeks to strengthen the South Korea-U.S. alliance, a shift in policy that worries many South Koreans. Frank Smith, Seoul.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, June 12th, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. If you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card or an eQSL card. As you know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. So, for the time being, we just can send our dear listeners electronic USL cards. So, here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Ivan A. Zeleny from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners, Salvatore Righi from Italy, and Volkan Atasever from Turkey. So, Ivan, Salvatore, and Volkan, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to your radio, IRIB English Radio. And of course, we've received many emails from around the world, which I mention some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. Bidan Chandra Sanyal, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Again, from India, we've received an email from Sharwan Kumar Gandhvir, Pekka Liti Poja from Finland has sent us an email. John Koba Femenia from Spain has sent us an email. From Italy, we've received an email from Federico Correa. This program, we just read these emails. So keep us company until the end of the program. I will be back and read these great emails from around the world. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as I said, Bidan Chandra Sanyal, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has sent us an email. So let's see what Bidan says. As we cross the inaccessible path to success, we also come across situations where everything goes wrong with us. And if you can't control yourself in this difficult time of life, you will never get out of this situation. So today I will tell you to remember all the time when everything is bad and wrong with you. Everything in life is temporary. Just as the light is hidden at the end of darkness, so there must be something right behind your bad times. Here, you just need to increase your endurance a little. And so at such times, don't just look at the bad things and see what good is happening to you. No matter how small it may be, you can handle it. Learn from the difficult memories and moments of life. Losing a job, financial problems, physical illness. This teaching will help you to follow the right path for the rest of your life. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Bidan Chandra Sanyal from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Many thanks for sending us this email. And many thanks for sharing this psychological piece of advice to us and to our great listeners around the world. Bidan Chandra Sanyal from India, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Write to us soon and tell us more pieces of advice, psychological pieces of advice to us and to our great listeners around the world. Wish you all the best. And Sharwan Kumar Gandhvir from India has sent us an email. Sharwan says, I am a regular listener of Radio Tehran's English service. I think Sharwan Kumar means IRIB English Radio, which is based in Tehran. Nowadays, I receive the latest news of Iran and the world via your website. It would be great if you can send me some materials and stickers available. Thank you. Best wishes for you and your radio listeners. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Sharwan Kumar Gandhvir from India. Yes, you are an old and regular listener of IRIB English Radio, which is based in Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you for sending us this email. Thank you for your support and commitment to your radio, IRIB English Radio. So, you received the latest news of Iran and the world via our website, and that's great, yes. We broadcast our news via shortwave as well as our website. And as for your request about sending you the materials and stickers of IRIB English Radio, unfortunately, it's not possible at the time of pandemic. So after the pandemic, we will get back on track and send you the souvenirs and materials of IRIB English Radio, yes. We wish you all the best, Sharwan. Write to us soon. Write to your radio. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. So, after a short break, I will be back with other emails. So the piece of music you just heard was a piece of music from southern Iran. We hope you enjoyed it. So, from Finland, we've received an email from Pekka Lite Poja. I'm sorry if I mispronounce your name, Pekka, because I don't know Finnish at all. So, Pekka says, dear friends, I listened to your program few days ago here in Kuvola in southern Finland. Reception of your program was quite good. I would be very happy if you could verify that I have heard right, and this signal was originally from your station transmitter. I am 66 years old and I have had this hobby since I was 12 years old. Now I am retired and I have started again this hobby. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Pekka, from Finland. Thank you very much for sending us this email. And we're so glad that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your region in Kuvola in southern Finland. In the Scandinavian region, it's great that you can receive our signals. So the reception of the programs was quite good, and we're so happy for that. So you are 66 years old. We wish you all the best. And you had this hobby of catching radio signals since you were 12 years old, and that's a long time. Pekka from Finland, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. Yes, we want to know about that, your opinions about our programs. Write to us soon, Pekka. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. And from Spain, we've received an email from Juan Coba Femenia. Let's see what Juan Coba Femenia from Spain says. Dear friends of IRIB English Radio, greetings from Spain. I'm sending you a report on the reception of your broadcast. I tuned in from Alti in Spain. I'd like to get the QSL card, if found correct, along with some station details. Also, I am writing down the different aspects of the SINPO code, which I hope will help you to find out how your broadcasts are received by Spain. I am a fan of Asian cultures, and I have found your broadcast very interesting. I greet you affectionately from Spain. Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, IRIB English Radio and Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you very much for sending us this email, Juan Coba Femenia from Spain. So you could receive and catch up the signals of IRIB English Radio in your region. As you said, you live in Alti in Spain, and that's good. That's great. Thank you for the information you send regarding SINPO code. Of course, my colleagues will read it and investigate about it, and that's great. You are a fan of Asian cultures. Yes, you can tune in to our programs, which focuses on the politics, on the culture, music, cinema, tourist attractions of Iran. Yes, we've broadcast many programs regarding the culture of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can tune in to these programs and you can find the archive of these programs at our website at this address, www.parstoday.com/en. Nowadays, we are broadcasting these programs and we have the archive of these programs at our website. Thank you so much for telling us your opinions about this. So I wanted to tell you this point, that the best source of information about the culture, about the politics, about the cinema, music, tourist attractions of the Islamic Republic of Iran is the source of IRIB. It's the best and the correct and precise source of getting information about Iran, IRIB, and particularly your radio, IRIB English Radio. Juan Cuba Femenia from Spain, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs, especially the cultural ones as you like it. So, after a short break, I will be back with the last email, which is from Federico Caria from Italy. Stay with us. So let's see what Federico Caria from Italy says. Hello, my name is Federico. I live in Santa Marinella, Italy. I am a shortwave listener and DXer, and this is my reception report to you. IRIB English Radio. If the transmission is confirmed and you found the report correct, I request you send me an EQSL card. Thank you. Salam, ciao, Federico Caria from Italy. Thank you for sending us this email. So, you are a shortwave listener and you could catch up the signals of IRIB English Radio. Federico, why don't you tell us which program or programs you like the best? Yes, in your upcoming emails, tell us your favorite programs at IRIB English Radio. So, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Federico Caria from Italy, write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And time tells me we have to wrap up this program. So before we wrap up this edition of Listeners Special, I wanted to thank those of our listeners who have sent us reception reports as well as emails, including Ivan A. Zeleni from Russia, Salvatore Righi from Italy, Volkan Atasever from Turkey, Federico Caria from Italy, Bidan Chandra Sanyal from India, Sharwan Kumar from India, Pekka from Finland, and Juan Coba Femenia from Spain. Please keep in touch with your program, Listeners Special, and IRIB English Radio. Have a good time and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-7000, 6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with Arabi English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to The Spotlight. The Venezuelan president has visited the Islamic Republic. In this visit, a strategic 20-year pact was signed which would further enhance these two oil-producing giants. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at what strategic significance these two countries have with each other and how they fit in this new world order that is unfolding, especially when it comes to countering the U.S. hegemonic aspirations. Our guests for this edition of The Spotlight include contributor Troika Collective, Libre Sankara, joins us from Tijuana, Mexico. Also joining us, journalist and author Daniel Lazar, who joins us from New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Daniel Lazar, let me first start with you. Looking at this visit by the Venezuelan president to Iran, it's significant in itself, but what do you think it means when you have these two oil-producing giants meet with each other and form what was announced was a 20-year cooperation pact?
Well, it means a lot of things. It means, number one, there's a very important new team of players in the international oil market. I mean, the alliance between Iran and Venezuela, strictly in petroleum terms, is quite formidable, and Iran can certainly help Venezuela to get its oil industry back on its feet. So they'll be able to bring about improved Venezuelan output. But I think on a more fundamental basis, it goes to show how the Biden administration in Washington is in growing crisis. And that its attempt, that Joe Biden's attempt to get the United States back at the forefront of the Western alliance are really backfiring badly. The war in the Ukraine is not going well from a U.S. perspective. Nationalism is breaking out all over. Turkey is pursuing an increasingly independent and aggressive policy. And now we see that Iran and Venezuela are also teaming up to counter U.S. hegemony. And there's also, by the way, the Inter-Americas Summit, which just took place in California, which turned out to be a colossal embarrassment for the United States and Joe Biden. So things are going very bad for the United States, and I think, therefore, countries like Venezuela and Iran know this and are maneuvering to take advantage of the situation, which they have every right to do.
Liber Sankara, so that is what we're looking at, isn't it? Because that seems to be the repeated tone of this important visit between the Venezuelan presidents and Iran's president, and also the Venezuelan president was received by Iran's leader. But to counter the U.S. hegemonic aspirations, a country that many are saying that the U.S. is now on the wane, that it's is not that military nor political power and sway that it had from before. How do you see these two countries in that sphere?
I mean, while we're talking about countries like Venezuela and Iran that have endured sanctions, are currently under sanctions, and yet they are still developing their economies and they're growing and they're able to build and partner with other countries. Well, we see a move towards multipolarity. And so Venezuela's ties with Iran is fundamental to combating U.S. hegemony in all countries. And like the comrade was sharing, I'm in Tijuana, Mexico right now at the Workers' Summit. So we actually created a summit that invited Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua so we can talk about actual change that we need in the Americas in favor of working class people. Because the Summit of the Americas, not only was it not attended, and it was a miserable failure, but there are alternatives that are being created. And so we see the U.S. hegemony getting weaker, even inside of the United States, where we're starting to see leftists unite and support Venezuela talking with Iran. And we also recently had a brigade of Venezuelan women that came to talk about the sanctions and the new partnership with Iran and how that helps and how that brings hope to the people of Venezuela. But not only that, it offers an alternative to Latin America to understand that they don't have to be in partnership with the U.S. government if they want to develop. In fact, it probably benefits them that Venezuela is building with Iran, and it allows those countries to want to build more with Venezuela, which allows, again, for the creation of a multipolar world that that goes beyond sanctions and also shows the weakness of the U.S. and the strengthening of countries that are maintaining their sovereignty despite the sanctions.
When was the last time you recall, Daniel Lazar, for the U.S. to hold a summit, in this case the Summit of the Americas, in which you had South American countries clamoring up to attend it because they think good things are going to happen? But yet not only have you had the ban by certain countries like Mexico, where then the other countries sent lower-level delegates, and the highlight wasn't even that. The highlight was that the U.S. influence is no longer there, and its power has decreased in that sense.
Yeah. That's absolutely correct. I mean, my sense is that Joe Biden, in an attempting to resurrect or to restore the American hegemony that existed before Trump's isolationist policies, he's pushing too hard. And as a result, American hegemony is falling apart even more rapidly as a consequence of his actions. So U.S. power is fast receding in Latin America. It's fast receding in China. It's fast receding in the Persian Gulf. And the war in the Ukraine is going more and more badly for the U.S. Now, this is not a, I'm not making a pro-Russian or pro-Venezuelan or even a pro-Iranian statement. But the point is clearly we're seeing a rapid acceleration in the decline in U.S. power.
Okay. What has led to this rapid acceleration of U.S. power, Libra Sankara, in your view? I mean, we're looking at many countries now opposing the way that the U.S. is aspiring, especially when it comes to how countries that don't follow U.S.'s foreign policy go on, of course, the sanctions list.
Well, I think we have a lot of clear examples of the fact that the U.S. doesn't really have access to a lot of natural resources. In fact, the U.S. economy is pretty contingent upon things being made in other countries and reselling those things, right? And so the economy and the way that the economy functions is not sustainable. And so what we're seeing are mineral-rich countries like Venezuela being able to overcome sanctions and with the help of Iran begin to not have to rely so much on U.S. hegemony. And we also see that countries that are moving towards sovereignty are creating a shift in Latin America and in the Americas in general to show just how weak the U.S. government and influence really is. Right, we're in the time period of elections. Honduras just finished their elections with a leftist candidate. Colombia is in the process of possibly electing a leftist candidate. That if Pacto Histórico wins, right, they have on their platform to reopen relations with Venezuela. And what does that do? Well, not only does that strengthen the Colombian economy, but that allows a new market for Venezuela to continue its growth, again, despite the sanctions. And so what we're seeing is a united resistance against the U.S., understanding that the U.S. is trying to bully countries into positions, but we are now in a strategic moment where those countries' best option isn't the U.S., and the U.S. isn't in a position to force those countries into relations with them. And so we're slowly seeing a shift of power and also people questioning, despite sanctions, how are these countries still developing at rates better than that of the U.S.? And why is the U.S. trying to create relations with Venezuela when it doesn't recognize the president, right? It's still trying to argue that Juan Guaido is the president, but it's not that he is not an elected official. He is not the official president. And yet the U.S. government is talking with Maduro about possibly bringing oil into the U.S. As the other comment was saying, right, because of the U.S.-Russia relations. And so the U.S. is in a really bad position because, like I said, they're not creating anything. They're simply reselling things. And so what we do know is that the U.S. historically has exploited mineral-rich countries, and now these mineral-rich countries are retaking the resources and looking for partnerships that benefit their country and the individuals that they're in partnership with. So this talks with Iran is very strategic and very important on behalf of the Venezuelan people.
Can you please tell me the train of thought, Daniel Lazar, that the U.S. has when it sends a delegate to Venezuela to talk about getting oil, to have these foreign companies, Western companies, to start operating again when they're in the middle of an oil crisis, they, meaning particularly Europe, and of course the U.S. in some respects. And then they come out and they said, okay, we're not going to give you sanctions relief like you think. We're just going to give you a little bit of a sanctions relief. And by the way, we don't recognize Maduro really as the president of Venezuela. We are still opting for regime change in that country. What type of thinking goes behind that approach?
I can't help you. I have no idea what kind of thinking goes behind that thought process. I mean, all I can say is that U.S. foreign policy is in disarray. It's incoherent. It doesn't make any sense. And these kinds of, back and forth over Venezuela, being nice one moment, mean the next. I mean, it's just incoherent. Biden has little power in Washington. Congress is not behind him. He's just flailing about helplessly. And meanwhile, U.S. power is contracting with really astonishing speed. We're all sitting here rubbing our eyes as this process takes place before us, and it's speeding up. So I think that, I mean, America is entering into a very unstable stage, which essentially could be a very dangerous stage because it makes it more likely to engage in rash military adventures. But the broader picture is that U.S. power is rapidly receding.
And do you agree when it comes to the U.S. dollar, Libra Sankara, that that is also something that's in dangerous territory? And I'd like to put that in the light where when you take a look at the fact that you have Venezuela has the largest reserves of oil, teaming up with Iran, which also has obviously large reserves of oil and gas. Of course, then you have to add Russia to that again, one of the largest producers of oil and gas. And then you have China. And these are all countries that are in one camp, along with the fact that you have Saudi Arabia, who has just transformed some of its dollar reserves into the yuan when it comes to the transaction of oil, which is the petrodollar system there, showing cracks there. And even Israel, which is the staunchest U.S. ally, is saying that the U.S. dollar is risky now. I have to change that to the yuan. Doesn't that point to the dollar's so-called strength decreasing at this point?
Yes, and I think, again, I think it's rooted in this the Ukraine-Russia situation and the fact that the U.S. sanctioned Russia, but what Russia did was ally with China to back up their monetary, their currency in Russia, which helped actually increase the value of the Russian currency. And so, again, I think we're looking at a moment where alternatives are being created and being acted upon, and the U.S. isn't in a position to really bully people into forcing them to do things, right? China is strategically allying with other countries that are looking to not be bullied by the U.S., but also to develop themselves, right? The Belt and Road Initiative is strategic on behalf of China to help not only develop countries, but also better their economy as they develop as a growing power, and bringing it back to Iran, right? Iran is simply doing what they see other countries doing, which is looking to increase their economies, right? Again, these are economies that are based in countries that have resources, and so they're in a better position, I think, now, learning from history. They're in a better bargaining position to look for partnerships without the U.S. being the first option and the option that they're being forced into, right? The U.S. is not in a position to force individuals, and so we see that being affected through the currency. And also, this is also a direct consequence of the U.S. trying to impose U.S. hegemony on countries like Iran and like Venezuela. Of course, Venezuela is going to work with Iran. Alex Saab was in the process of going to Iran so that they could get resources to send back to Venezuela to help the Venezuelan people that are currently under sanctions, mm-hmm. right? And so this allyship between Venezuela and Iran is strategic on many fronts. And I think on the global platform, this is a big slap in the face to the U.S., slap after slap, because they are not in the strength and position to bully people. And they're currently not in economic position to do a lot other than kind of scrabble. And like the my friend was saying before me, right? This is also a dangerous position because this could lead to the U.S. Trying to justify another war to try to increase its economy, because that is one of the things that the U.S. exports best, war and violence. And so we also have to be wary and pay attention to that. But there are also strategic partnerships happening that would help to address that if it does happen. Now, there's also something interesting happening in Latin America in general. The current presidential candidate in Brazil, Lula, has just shared not so long ago that if he becomes president, he's going to create a form of currency that is going to be based on the Brazilian currency, backed by their resources, and that's going to be, I believe it's going to be called the Sur, and it's going to be a Latin American currency that can be used all throughout Latin America, right, so that countries don't have to use the U.S. dollar.
Right. He has announced that, and there has been some public reception on that. So Daniel Lazar, we're quickly coming to a close here. So we have the map of the world here, okay? We have the Americas, or Latin America, in which, as our guests are indicated, and headlines are reading, is Latin America shifting to the left. When we take a look at successes like in Chile, Honduras, and Peru, and Brazil seems to be projected to go to the direction of Lula da Silva, and as our guests there mentioned about how he wants to shift away from the dollar. You have, obviously, the eastern part of the world, where you have China, and then you have the pivot, so to speak, Iran, Russia, at the forefront there. You have trade blocks that exclude the U.S. You have energy, oil-producing powerhouses like Iran and Venezuela teaming up. And then you have Russia and China, as I mentioned before. Is this a tectonic shift that we're watching that is taking away the U.S. power and influence across the world?
Yes, it is a tectonic shift. But it's a little more complex than that. Just give me one second to explain. The issue here is, there are a lot of issues here, but the most important issue is inflation. I don't agree that America's problems are due to a shortage of raw materials. I mean, America is now self-sufficient in energy terms, thanks to the fracking revolution. But inflation is shifting the advantage to raw material producers, whether those raw materials are oil or grain or phosphate fertilizers, et cetera. And so the balance of power is shifting very dramatically, which is why we're seeing Venezuela, Iran acting with new independence, and possibly even why Russia is prevailing on the battlefield as well. So I think what we're really seeing is a U.S. capitalism going into a major crunch, because the Federal Reserve will have no choice but to jack up interest rates very powerfully, and that will throw the U.S. into a major recession. And that recession, I personally believe, will be quite punishing and will have powerful effects in terms of U.S. power projection, the international arena, et cetera, et cetera. So I see the major problem as economic.
All right, very well. We're going to end it there. Thank you very much for your contribution there, Daniel Lazar, journalist and author. And Libra Sankara, contributor at the Troika Collective. Thank you, from Tijuana, Mexico. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mika Vitakwe and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his immaculate progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, dear listeners from all around the world, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another edition from series of QNN Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, if you have been following such shows, we are trying to answer some doubts and misconceptions on the